All right, we're beginning here on the last line of Yud Zayin Amud Bet. Amar Le Ravina the Rova, Katvei Votvei Bikisatei. He writes the get and then puts it in his pocket. Deimafaisa Tifayes, that if he is successful at appeasing her or resolving the conflict, then he won't give the get. So there's some sort of interim period between the writing of the get and the potential giving of the get, because he has intent in the middle to try to reconcile the differences between them and hope that they don't have to get divorced. So my, what's the din over here? The question is, according to Rashi and Tosafot seconds that here, is according to both Reish Lakish and according to Rabbi Yochanan. For Rabbi Yochanan, who the problem with a dated get or a predated get is the problem of chipui, then obviously the question is here, is that there's going to be a difference between the dating and the writing of the get and the actual giving of the get. So you will have that problem. As far as Reish Lakish is concerned, at least within the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, that Moshe Natanei Na LeGarsha, once he decides that he's going to divorce her, then already from the Zman HaKtiva, the get already eliminates the need for worrying about Peirot, because that's the time that the Peirot stop belonging to the Baal, or we terminate the right to Peirot at that time. So seemingly, according to Reish Lakish, there should be no problem here. Even according to the Chachamim in Reish Lakish, it's at the Zman Chatima. But the difference here, and this is what Rashi mentions, and Tosafot mentions this as well, over here, the Baal is considering not divorcing her. So you can't say that, oh, he loses his Peirot from the time that he decides to divorce her. He hasn't really decided to divorce her, because he's looking to reconcile in the interim period. And therefore the question exists, even according to Reish Lakish, although many of the Rishonim believe that this question is only according to Rabbi Yochanan's Shita. But you can see that in Rashi, you can see in Tosafot over here, it says, Hachamoda yesh tabal perot at shat netina, kevin, dimefaisa tifayes. So that's what Tosafot says, that there's still a possibility of this get not going through, and therefore the perot still belong to the Baal during that period of time. So Amalei, lo makdim inish purnata lenafshe. People don't accelerate puranut, difficulties, or bad things for themselves. Rashi over here describes that purnoto is the fact that he is going to get divorced. And getting divorced for him is a difficulty or a bad thing. And we know that from the fact that he wants to reconcile. Had he not wanted to reconcile, it wouldn't be necessarily a given that divorce was a negative or purnoto for him. In general, in an objective basis, we would assume that divorce is negative. But here, in particular, we know that his willingness or desire to reconcile shows that he really does not want to get divorced in this case. And therefore, lo makdim inish, people don't do something like this, which is people don't write a get when they are still uncertain as to whether they're really going to get divorced. Because that is the equivalent of, we call it a bad omen, something that people don't engage or face the realities of difficulties until they really are forced against the wall. And if he has any hope that he's going to reconcile the marriage, he won't have a get written until he's certain that he's going to divorce the woman. We have a similar principle with regards to Tisha B'Av and Shivasar B'Tammuz. The Gemara discusses when it falls out on Shabbat, what do we do? Is it Nidche to Yom Rishon or Magdimim to beforehand? The Gemara there says that we are not Magdim Purnoto, but we don't try to accelerate or bring forward Puranut. We always try to push them out. And again, there, it's true. Here, even on a psychological level, it's true that people will try to avoid facing the reality of that negativity or that bad event as long as they can, as long as they have hope that there is some sort of possibility of reconciliation over here. And therefore he says, we're not going to be gozer for these unusual cases, because someone who does this is out of the ordinary. And so therefore, that type of case that you're describing here is lo shchiach, and we're not going to worry about it being captured under the gzerat chachamim. So, amar lei Ravina the Ravashi, gitin habaim mimdinat hayam, gitim that come from overseas, demichtevei b'nisan, v'lo matu ad tishrei. They're written 6 months before they reach us. They're written around Pesach time. They show up around Rosh Hashanah time. Ma hoilu chachamim b'takanatam. Then why does the whole takana of putting the zman in the get, What does that do for us? Because here there's a clear separation between the Zman HaKtiba and Chatima and the giving of the get. Not by design, but because of the physical separation between the husband and the wife. The amount of time it takes for the get to get there is 6 months or so, and therefore there's going to be a differential between the signing of the get and the giving of the get, and so the date in the get will not reflect the time that the get was given. So now, here again, Rashi says that the question applies to ben l'inyan perot, ben l'inyan znut. The tarfalu kuchot miyom aktiva. The question applies both to Reish Lakish and to Rabbi Yochanan. Here, Tosafot deviates from that and says that he thinks it's wrong, that here the question is only on Rabbi Yochanan. Because over here, as far as Reish Lakish is concerned, he did decide to divorce her. And so from the Zman Aktiva already, or the Chatima, whenever the get was done, the perot were lost at that point in time. And then that's rightfully so, and the dating is correct. That isn't the problem here. Only according to Rabbi Yochanan, we have a problem with Chipui, which is the get is dated long before she actually receives the get. And therefore, when she gets the get, and it's dated all the way back then, she could use that as a cover-up for an extramarital affair that took place between the two periods of time, because we don't have certainty as to when she got the get. So, Amalei, Hanu Kala Itluhu. Something like this has publicity surrounding it, or it is clear the fact that this happens. Rashi says over here, Kala Itluhu, Ben Linyan Zut, Ben Linyan Perot, Baile Tuyi Raya, Emat Mata Gitali Yada. Rashi says that the burden of proof is on the woman here to show when the get came into her hands. So because the burden of proof is on her, she will have to then get it maybe verified, validated, and baked in when she received the get. The problem with Rashi's interpretation and why the Tosafot, many other Rishonim rejected is, what is the chashash here? The chashash here is for chipui, is that she's trying to cover up for an extramarital affair. She has no vested interest in getting this document validated. She'll let it be a safek. As long as it's a safek, she can't be punished. She can't have a death penalty when we're not certain. And so if you say the burden of proof is on her, she just won't prove it. And it'll be assumed that the get came at some point. It might have been before the extramarital affair. And it's to her advantage not to validate or tell when the get came. So because of that, they reject this view of Rashi. What other Rishonim say of Hani Kala Itluhu? Tosafot notes it here. We mentioned it in yesterday's daf as well. Tosafot mentioned it there as well. That when there is a big separation in time between the Ktiva and the Chatima of the Shtar, then people take note of it. Rumors circulate, it gets out that this was not a get that was given today, but rather written earlier. And therefore, people will look into it. Beit Din will look into it, people will check into it to make sure or find out when exactly the get was received by the woman. And that's what it says, Omari, Kala Itluhu Kishorim Bizman, Shizman Aktiva Hi Hayakodim Misira, Itla Kala the Milta. And therefore they pay attention, or they're particular about noting when the get was actually given to the woman, because they see there is this huge gap between the Zman Aktiva and the Zman of the giving of the get. In that case, Tosafot says, why do they put a Zman in the get at all? In those cases where it's going over long distance, why put a Zman? It's not going to help you at all anyway. So he says, Yesh Lomar, Yedeh Zman, Yesh Lo Kol, the reason that you put the date in here is not because the date is significant, but rather because the date indicates that you have the problem, that you have a huge elapsement of time between the ktivat get and the receipt of the get, and that's what's going to make them take note. This is an older get because it was written or sent earlier. So that's one thing that Tosafot notes over here. Tosafot here doesn't mention it, but on yesterday's daf mentioned that this is only true when he does it ayidei shlish. It's only a case when he does it a yedeh shliach. You need a number of components to make it that is a kala idluhu. The first of which, again, is that it's clear that there's a huge elapsement of time between the writing of the get and the receipt of the get. And number two is it has to be done through a shliach. It has to be done through a agent that brings the get. If the husband himself brings the get, then there is less kala idluhu in that case because people don't take as much note about the ktivat to get. They see the husband giving the get to the woman. They think, oh, that's when the get happened. They don't pay attention to ktivat. When it's denya de shaliach, there's a lot more attention paid to the get and the dating of the get and so on. And that's what brings about the kala itluhu. So most Rishonim demand both of those, that there be a gap in time which makes it noticeable, but also that it's done ayidei shaliach. Tosfot then continues to discuss, again, something that we mentioned yesterday, which is, in the case of chipui, why do you want a zman in this get? Both because there is no death penalty today, and because the zman in this get is only to the detriment of the gzera of chipui, because it ends up predating the get to its effectiveness when it was given to the woman. So actually, it's to the detriment to have a date in this get, because it only serves to help the woman out if you believe that it's shema chipui, that the reason is shema yechapet. So Tosfot over here brings that there are other issues with regards to a get, or why a person would want to predate the get. It's not just about mitah, but over here he mentions gzera shema yechapet banim mamzerim inamim heri bana beit hamikdash, or maybe even when there is no death penalty, we can hope that Mashiach will come, there'll be a Beit HaMikdash, and the death penalty will be reinstated. Or the possibility that the husband who wants to take her back will not be able to take her back if she was married at the time during the extramarital affair. But if she had this note after they were divorced, then the husband's permitted to take her back. And again, that allows him to keep his wife despite the fact that she had an extramarital affair. So here, Tosfot brings what we mentioned yesterday, that the reason for dating the get, or the reason for someone wanting to cheat on the dating the get, is not limited to Shema Yechapet, only in cases of the death penalty. There are other reasons why someone would want to do this, even though it's not resulting in the death penalty. Again, that raises the question, and we mentioned this yesterday on the Tosfot, on the top of Yudzayin Amud Bet, where Tosfot explains that Znut Lo Shchicha, he says over there, Znut B'mezid and Chiyuv Mitah is not Shchiach. But you see over here, in Tosfot himself, it mentions the fact that that's not the only reason. So when you say Znut no Shchiach, again, maybe it's not meaning that Znut b'mezid b'edim atra, but it means Znut in general. It's not something that's so Shchiach that Reish Lakish wants to make a Gzerah unto that type of Znut. Because over here you see that surrounding this Znut, even when it's not b'mezid, there is a whole other slew of halachot that would be affected by the dating or the predating of the Shtar. And it doesn't have to do with Edim Hatra'ah, it simply has to do with the Znot and the implications of that Znot. Itmar, Meimatai Monim Leget. From when does the clock start for the Get? We know from the Gemara in Yevamot that after a woman gets divorced, she has to wait 3 months before she can marry the next individual. The purpose of those 3 months is to discern between children that are born from the first husband, the children are born from the second husband. By the time 3 months have elapsed, we would know if she was pregnant from the first husband, as well as the fact that if she gives birth from the first husband, it'll be clear, it would be too short a duration of a pregnancy for it to have come from the second husband. So that 3 month window ensures that we know who the father of that child is. The Gemara in Yevamot discusses about why it matters, meaning that there are halachic ramifications, as well as spiritual ramifications. There the Gemara notes, the Shekhinah is only Shorah on people who know their Yichus and know who their parents are. So there are reasons for this. The question is, when does that clock start ticking? The Gemara in Yevamot discusses over there that even in cases where we're certain that she wasn't together with her husband beforehand, there's still a low plug of 3 months. And so there's a machloket as to how low plug we say, how many things it impacts in terms of Erusin, Nisuin, Bitula, Bi'ula. All of these differences there, the Tanaim there argue about how much of a low plug do we say that you have to wait these 3 months. But assuming the woman has to wait the 3 months, when do we start? Rav Amar Mishat Nitina. Rav says it's from the time she received the get. Shmuel Amar Mishat Ktiba. Shmuel says it's from the time that the get is dated, from the time that the get is written. I just note this as an aside, but we do have a machloket between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Meir as to what makes the get into a get. According to Rabbi Lazar, it's Ede Misira Karte. The get really only becomes effective with the Misirata get, with the giving of the get to the woman. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir believes that Ede Chatima Karte. When the Edim sign on it, then that makes the get into a get, and the woman still has to receive the get. Given that, and you can see this in the Tosfot read, in the previous sugya, when he says that for Reish Lakish it's not a question, he says that, Reish Lakish shamar mishata chatima, yesh la perot, v'afo pishi ichar nitinata get, even though he delayed the giving the get, Deidav bechotamav zachim lo. That the signatures of the Edim already are zuche on his behalf, and therefore the termination of the peirot already happens with the signatories of the get, and you don't have to worry about the fact that the get was given at a much later date. But that means over here, if, which we do, we pass them like Rabbi Lazar, that Ede Mesira Karte, it turns out that really Shmuel is the one who's being mekil over here, because Rav says Mishat Netina, Netina is the time of the Mesira. On the other hand, Shmuel says Mishat Ktiva, so Shmuel is being mekil that even though maybe the Mesira happened at a later time, but the Ktivata Get is the determination for the clock starting. On the other hand, if you hold like Rebbe Meir, that the Chatima is what starts the clock, then it turns out that Shmuel, according to Rebbe Meir, is the way that you would expect it, by the Ktivat HaGet and the Chatimat HaGet, whereas Rav is being Machmir, that you have to wait until Netinat HaGet, which is more like an Amarat Ayin issue, which is that even though the Get was already effective from the time of the Chatimat HaEdim, nevertheless, we wait till the Netinah, because that's when people saw the event happen. And so because of that, that's when we're going to start the clock. So depending if this is according to Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Elazar, will make a difference as to who's being machmir or who is being mekil. When you say that Eidei Katima Karte, and then the get is only given later, maybe to say that when the woman receives the get, that it's retroactively effective from the date of the ktiva, from the dating within the shtar. On the other hand, if you say that Eidei Mesira Karte, then the date in the shtar is not relevant because the get only goes effective when it is given. Now, Matkif la Rav Natan bo Shaya the Shmuel. Yomru shtei nashim bechatzer achat, zo asura v'zo muteret. You're going to end up here with a strange phenomenon. Rashi claims it's a single husband sending it to both of his wives. He sends a get to each of his wives. Or the other Rishonim suggest that a case here is where it's two separate husbands divorcing their wives, and their wives receive their gitin on the same day. Rashi says, again, it's a single husband that's doing it, but he wrote one of the gitin before the other get. So in this case, their zmana netina is the same. I mean, they both receive their get on the same day, but the zmana ktiva is different between them. So according to Shmuel, you'll have this very strange phenomenon, which is two women who receive their gitin on the same day will actually have a different count for their 3 months, because you're going by zmana ktiva. Amar le'abayi, zo zman gita mochiach alea, zo zman gita mochiach alea. In Ochanami, you will have a different count. Optically, it'll look like one is only waiting 2 months, one is waiting 3 months, or one's waiting 2.5, the other one's waiting 3, but when you pull out the get and look at it, it'll be clear that everybody waited 3 months, because the date on the get will reflect the zman aktiva, and you won't have a problem, because it'll be obvious from the zman on the get that everybody waited 3 months. Amar says, Tanya kavote derav, Tanya Kavote de Shmuel. We have a braita that supports Rav's position, and a braita that supports Shmuel's position. Tanya Kavote de Rav. We have a braita that supports Rav's position. Asholei get the ishto, v'nishtahesh liach b'derech gimol chodoshim. Person sent a get to his wife, and there was a delay, or that was the amount of time it took for the get to reach her. There was 3 months before it actually reached her. So now when the get reaches her, according to Shmuel, your time should have been elapsed already. 3 months since the writing of the get, she shouldn't have to wait anymore. Nevertheless, tzricha lamtin gimel chodoshim. She has to start the count from the time that she receives the get. She has to wait the 3 months. That is a proof to Rav's position that the count goes from the time she received the get, not from the time of the ktivat get. Well, the get yashan ein choshoshim. When it comes to a get yashan, we're not choshesh. Because he was never together with her during that 3 month period. A get yashan is something that we're going to bump into later in the Masechta, but a get yashan is when someone writes a get to give to their wife, but before they give the get, they are secluded with her. They have yichud with the woman. In that case, the get is pasul. You can't use that get to divorce the woman with, whether that's only lechatchila or even bidiavad, you can't use it. We'll see later on in the Masechta. Why can't you use such a get? Rashi explains over here, and the Gemara later on will explain. Taima shema yomru gita kodim livna. Shema titaber. Once they are already secluded, we have suspicions that they had intercourse. If that's the case, she could be pregnant from that incident, and then he gives her the get. But the get is dated prior to that time period that they were together, and then when she gives birth to a child later on, the child is out of wedlock, because the get shows her being divorced prior to the birth of the child. And people are going to say that the get was beforehand, and she was nitabra miznut, and that she had a baby out of wedlock, whether it means znut in the classic sense of znut, or znut here means just out of wedlock. Either way, going to cast negative nature, cast aspersions on this child who's born seemingly out of wedlock. So that we don't worry about over here. In this case, it's obvious why we don't worry about it, because the husband isn't around. And since the husband's not around, we don't worry about get yashan, because there's no way he was mityached ita. Tanya kavetet ishmuel. We have a breita that supports Shmuel's position. Hamashlish get liishto. Someone who gives a get to a third party to give to his wife. Now the way Rashi explains it over here, Masara get lishlish kedei lagasha bo lesof gimel chadashim v'hu alach ledarko. So Rashi says it's almost identical to the previous case, slightly different because here, instead of the Baal being overseas and sending it with the Shliach, the Baal is here, but he gives it to a Shliach and then goes, leaves town. So that's how Rashi describes it. So basically the cases are equivalent, where the Baal is giving it over to a Shliach to give to his wife, and then the Baal is not present. On the other hand, many say that Rashi's explanation isn't correct, because the word here is Hamashlish, rather than hasholeach. If you're talking about a shliach, or someone who's going to disappear, then you would call the person a shliach, being his agent in order to do this. On the other hand, mashlish sounds more like an escrow, where he's giving it to the party to give at the end of 3 months. I can see that in Tosfot, it says, v'chinam perishkeni alamari afilu hu ba'ir. The case here is, even if the husband is present, and he just tells the shlish to give it at the end of 3 months, then that is also the same case over here. Fundamentally, that will have implications in terms of the halacha, based on what this braita says, as to whether you think the husband is present or not present. Rashi thinks the husband's out of the picture. Tosafot and many of the other Rishonim believe that the husband is in town, he just gave it over to the shliach, or to this escrow, to give the get after the 3 month period. Mashlish get ishto, v'amar lo, al titnei ula el alachar gimel chodoshim, only give it to her after 3 months. Mishenatnu la muteret linaseh miyad. Once they give the getter, marry immediately. That is like Shmuel, who says that as soon as you have the ktivat get and the dating of the get, you look, 3 months have elapsed, no problem. And we don't worry about the get yashan, because he was never secluded with her. Now, according to Rashi, the reason he wasn't secluded with her was because he's not here, he's not in town. On the other hand, the Braita here, according to the Balei Tosafot and the other Rishonim, the reason he wasn't Nitiachidimah is because we know he never secluded with her. Had he secluded with her, we would have a problem. But we just know, or we have information, that he never secluded with her after that period of time. Rav Kahana, Virav Popi, Virav Ashi, Avde Mishat Ktiva. So Rav Kahana, Virav Popi, and Rav Ashi paskin like Shmuel, that the count of the 3 months starts from the writing or the dating of the get. Rav Papa, Rav Huna, Braid the Rav Yeshua, Avde Mishat Nitina. They did like Rav, and only started the count from Mishat Nitina, from the time that the get was given to the woman. Behilchata Mishat Ktiva. The Gemara says that we pass on like Shmuel, that the 3 month count begins from the Shat Ktiva, assuming again that there was no seclusion after that period of time between the husband and wife. So now Itmar, Mei Matai Tuba Mishametet. From one point in time, does a ktubah subject to shmitat ksafim during the shmitah year, whether, again, according to most Rishonim, at the end of the shmitah year, any loans that are outstanding are forgiven, unless you have a pruzbol to overcome that problem. According to the Rosh, there's a daya that it's in the beginning of the shmitah year. But here, any outstanding loans should be wiped out. A ktubah, in essence, is an obligation of the husband towards the wife, and is the equivalent of an outstanding debt. If that's the case, the Shemitah should wipe it out. So the question is, at what point does that happen? Now, in order for a loan to be wiped out, it has to have a number of features to it. The first of which is, it can't be a Maisa Beit Din, can't be something that's an activity of Beit Din, and that's part of why the Pruzbol works, is because you give over all your loans to the Beit Din, and then it becomes a Maisa Beit Din, and there's no issue of Shmitat Ksafim with regards to a Maisa Beit Din, or when it's in the hands of the Beit Din. The second thing is it has to be subject to lo yigos, which is that a loan that can be pressured to be collected is subject to shmitat ksafim. And the restriction is lo yigos, that you're not allowed to press them, you're not allowed to go and collect the loan if shmitah passes. But that implies that until at that point in time you had a right of collection or that you were going to collect. An outstanding loan, which is not really acting like a loan because you don't have a right of collection, that might include the fact that the due date of the loan is after this period of time, or it might have to do with the fact that the nature of the relationship makes it that it's considered to be credit, but not a loan. So for instance, that happens many times with a makolot in the modern day here in Israel, where they extend you credit. And every time you come into the makolot, they write down what you took. Then at some point, the owner of the makolot says, you know, your bill's reached this amount, can you pay it? So over there, as long as it's just writing down the credit, that's not considered to be a loan in the true sense of Shemitah, because he's not attempting to collect the loan. It's extending the credit without trying to collect it. Only once the balachanut says, you know, you owe me this money, then does it become a chuvah that'll be wiped out. So now here by the ketubah, you have the same issue, which is, as long as the woman is married, she really doesn't have a claim from the ketubah. It's a future claim that she will have. So it's clear during the period of the marriage that that's not going to be knocked out by the Shemitah. Even after the woman becomes a widow, her ketubah at that point in time doesn't necessarily mean that she's going to collect money. Her ketubah entitles her to a right of mizonot, and that's what the Tosfot read says over here. Ketubah lo kaima lo guvaina. The ketubah is not for means of collection. Ela le mizonot. It grants her the right to have mizonot. Hilka chosman shenizonet ve'eno tovat ketubata. As long as she's taking mizonot out of the estate and not collecting her ketubah, lo karbinam be lo igos. It's not a problem for lo igos. Mushamachi ena mishametet. So there for sure it will not be mishametet. So the question is, what is the trigger factor that makes it into a loan or establishes it that it is subject to Shemitah? Again, so the natural state of the ketubah is that it is not subject to Shemitah, either because it's a ma'aseh beitin, the ketubah, as Rashi says over here, it's a t'nai beitin, which we'll see in a second, and that the ketubah exists even if she doesn't have a ketubah, or, again, the fact that her ketubah is not made for collection either as a raya or a entry ticket to get her mizonot, necessarily as a loan. She has to establish the fact that she wants collection on her ketubah and to get paid out on her ketubah in order for it to become an outstanding loan that would be subject to Shemitah Ksafim. When does that happen? So that's the Gemara's question. Rav Amar, Mishitif Gom Vitis Gof. That it includes two things. First of all, that she took some collection on it, and then she demands repayment of the rest. So for Rav, in order to turn into a document that obligates payment, and therefore is an outstanding loan, she first has to take some collection on the ketubah, and then the remainder of the ketubah, she has to say, you owe me the money, and I want it paid out. Or Shmuel Amar, Pgama, Afo Pishalo Zakfa, if she takes any collection on the ketubah, even though she doesn't demand repayment on the rest of it, it already is now converted into an obligation, a loan, or Zakfa, Afo Pishalo Pagma, or if she demands payment of her ketubah, even though she hasn't received any payment, either one of those would be sufficient to deem it already a loan and no longer a ma'aseh beitin or, as we said before, possibly just a ticket that gives her the right to mizonot, now becomes an outstanding loan, which will be subject to Shemitah. Tanya kavote de Rav, Tanya kavote de Shmuel. We have a braita that supports Rav, and we have a braita that supports Shmuel. Tanya kavote de Rav, meimatai ketubah mishamshet. When does a ketubah now subject to Shemitah Ksafim, Mishitifkom, Tiskof? So here it's clear that you need both of those items. Yes, she has to have taken collection on part of the ketubah and then left the residual as an outstanding obligation to be paid. Pagma velo zakfa. Zakfa velo pagma. In that case, if she did either one, whether is she had demanded payment on the ketubah or she took payment but didn't demand payment on the residual, ena mishametet. That doesn't work. That will not be subject to Shemitah Ksavim. Asher tifkom v'tiskof. You need both of them. You need to take partial payment on the ketubah, plus set up the rest as being an obligation to be paid. As Rashi says, each one of these items deals with a different issue. The tifkom shows that her mindset is that she's going to collect on this ketubah, and therefore she will press collection of this loan. the tisgof takes it out of being a maisa beitin, meaning that establishing it as now you owe me the money says that it's no longer a ktubah, but now we've converted it into a obligation. And that takes away the maisa beitin aspect of it. So that's what Rashi says. You need both of them, according to Rav, in order to eliminate it. Tani kavata de Shmuel. We have a bright that supports Shmuel's view. Ones, knas, upitoi, uktubatisha. All of these cases where there is money owed through a maisa beitin. Ones is a case of rape. Knas, separate from ones, because ones also involves a knas. It's a fine for a rape. The knas promotes the shemra. Upitoi, in the case of mifateh, by motzi shemra, it's called a knas, because over there, there's only one payment, which is the knas itself. On the other hand, by onus and mifateh, why they're segregated out and not called the knas is, because that's not the only payment there. There's a payment of tsar, boshet, there are other payments that are involved, and that's why it segregates them here in this list. Uktubatisha. In those cases, shizakfan bemilveh, mishamtim. If the person demands payment of those obligations, then they are subject to shmitat ksafim. Vimlav, ein mishamtim. Without that, they are not mishamet. You see from this that zkifa alone is sufficient to make it subject to shmitat ksafim. So the truth is, when we say Tanya kavata de Shmuel, it's only a braita that supports one side of Shmuel. Shmuel said either she takes collection and a portion of it, or if she demands payment. The braita only supports that side, which says when she demands payment. But it's clear here in the Braita, it includes Ketubat Isha, but it says over here that a Maisa Beit Din is no longer a Maisa Beit Din once you demand repayment. When you're saying, now pay me, I want my collection of my right through the actions of Beit Din, that already takes away the Maisa Beit Din and makes it subject to Shemitah Ksafim, supportive of Shmuel's view that you don't have to actually take repayment, but you just simply have to demand repayment. So in Meimatai, Nizkafim Bimilveh. When is that moment where it converts from a maisa beitin into a loan obligation? Mishat hamada bedin. That when you go to court, then it's making it clear that you want collection of this money and you want enforcement of this collection. And so therefore, hamada bedin already qualifies the individual to say that that is already a loan and no longer a maisa beitin, a knas, or something that's written in the Torah. Am Shmuel ktubah kimaseh beitin damya. So here Shmuel says a ktubah is like a maaseh beitin. It's a derivative of what we're saying before, which is it's clear that until she does something in order to make demand of payment, the ktubah is not subject to shmitat ksafim. And in not being subject to shmitat ksafim, why? So we said either because she's not trying to collect, but also because it's a maaseh beitin. So Shmuel says that a ktubah is a maaseh beitin. And as Rashi describes it over here, Tanai Beitin Hu, that the Ketubah is a condition of Beitin. In other words, she gets the Ketubah even if she doesn't have a Ketubah because that's the demand of Beitin. And that's a right, not necessarily a loan or an outstanding loan. So now, Shmuel says that that has impact. Ma Masa Beitin Nichtavim Beyom Benechtamim Balayla. Just like a Beitin that is involved in a Psak Halacha, they can write their conclusions. They can write down their psak during the day and sign it at night. Af ktubah nechtevet beyom v'nechtemet balayla. So too, a ktubah that's written during the day can be signed at night because it's like a maisa beitin. Since it's a maisa beitin, the same way that a maisa beitin can be done during the day and only signed at night, so too, a ktubah can be written during the day and signed at night. So now Rashi says, "Af tuba mishak tiva dechnasa lechupa dekiruv chadnut hu chayel shibuda afagol delo achtim." So what Rashi says is that even though the chatima only happens at night, Rashi says the reason for this is that the chatimot are not essential to the kinyan or the obligation of the tuba over here, and that is because the marriage itself generates the kinyan, or the sealing of the obligations between the parties. The Gemara terms this in other places, hein hein dvarim shniknaim b'misira. These are items that are acquired even though there's no formal kinyan. That has to do with tanaim, that are done around the chuppah. The marriage itself creates a kinyan for those items that were negotiated or agreed upon, even without any formal kinyan around them. And so that, even though normally we require gemirat hadat or consideration, whatever the requirements are to obligate the other party, in the case of marriage, marriage is an exception to the rule, as Rashi says over here, because of the kiruv chatnot, the shibuda and the kinyan happens, even without the formalization of the tubah, the signing of the tubah, and it has broader impact. Even in the modern law, that is an exception to the rule where marriage can generate the quote-unquote consideration that you need in order to enforce a contract, even though there was no consideration given. So that's the case here, that the marriage itself creates the kinyan, and therefore the signing of the document at night is not a problem, because in essence, the ktiva that happened during the day and the dating during the day is correct, because of the fact that the chuppah happened during the daytime. The fact that they signed it at night is inu ma'ala ve'inu murid, because the kinyan was done. When they're signing to the fact that it happened during the day, and it did happen during the day, so there's no problem with that. That's the way that Rashi describes it. Just like the ikar ma'aseh beit din is the psak halacha itself, and the signing is just a verification of the psak, so too by the ktubah. The sign of the ktubah is not the ikar, because the kinyan or the chuppah is what generates the, as the Tosfot reads, says, the shibud of the ktubah. And the signing of the ktubah is just a formality to evidence the fact that all of this took place. And therefore, they're similar in that way, that the ikar kinyan or the ikar davar took place during the day, and the signatures are just a secondary issue to verify or validate that which happened earlier, and that's why they can both be done at night. Tosafot over here says that it has to do with the kala itlahu. The shapsak din itu kala kamo shtar. Tosafot says that a maisa beit din, a psaka beit din, is public. And so therefore the publicity already happens during the day when they give their psak beit din. And the fact that they sign it at night is not so relevant, because everybody knows about the psak during the day. And therefore when they date it during the day, it's correctly dated because everybody knew about the information. And once you come to din, amada b'din, that's already something that's made public and well known. And so therefore, also over here, in the case of the ktubah, the fact that the chuppah and everything happened during the day, that's already kala yidlahu. That already is publicly known or well known that the ktubah went into effect during the day, because everybody knows that it happened during the day. The fact that they signed it at night isn't so relevant, because who are we trying to protect? We're trying to protect buyers that are coming in after this fact, or lenders that come in after the fact, that this woman has a priority claim now on the estate because of her ktubah. Well, everybody's going to know that she got married during the day, and that's kala idluhu. So Tosfos doesn't see it as an issue of kinyan, but rather an issue of publicity, and the publicity happened during the day, therefore the signing at night, even though it's dated for the day, is not detrimental or problematic. Tubatei de Rabbi Chia Barav, ichto bayom v'ichtam balayla. Exactly this case, the ktuba of Rabbi Chia Barav, Rav's son, when he got married, they ended up writing the ktuba during the day, but only signing it at night. Hava Rav hatam, v'lo amar lehu v'lo mide. Rav was present, and he did not object to them doing this. His silence was an approval of what was being done, and therefore you see from here that that was correct. Lema kashmul svirle. So let's say Rav holds like Shmuel. Basically, what's happening in this situation is that what Shmuel said is true. They had the ktubah during the day, and then they signed at night. So maybe Rav also subscribes to that same position of Shmuel. He says, no, asukim ba'uto inyan havu. Here was a different case, is because they were topically relevant. This is an important consideration during putting together of contracts, or especially around the marriage where you're doing tanaim. Oskim ba'oto inyan. As long as you're discussing the topic, anything that's done within that context has the power of the kinyan of the marriage. And so, soto over here. Oskim ba'oto inyan. The time, Yom Rabbi Lazar by Rabbi Tzadok, lo shanu leshein asukim ba'oto inyan. That's only true when they're not working on this. Aval asukim ba'oto inyan kasher. If they're dealing with this topic, then it is kasher. So that's what Rashi says over here. The edim were muzumanim lechtom. The edim were ready to sign during the daytime. They were ready and available. Just the negotiations or whatever was going on caused some delay in the signing. Rashi claims over here, Lamtina Chiyaseim a sofer at the shtar. The sofer was writing the shtar. Even though the agreements were all done, they were ready and available. Since they were ready available, then kasher mishak tiva nami itle kalo. Rashi says over here, then it's kasher because of the kol that happened from that point in time, or in essence, Rashi said before that the marriage already created the kinyan that you needed here. That's what Tosfot says here. It has a call like as if it was signed, since they were ready to sign it, and everything was done, it was just the documentation that took time. Already the news gets out that this was the agreement, or everybody knows about it. Since they are ready and available to sign, that already deems it as if done, because all the factors that we need in terms of the kinyan and in terms of the kol already happened during the daytime. So therefore to sign it at night is not detrimental. But when they're not involved in that topic or that issue, then that's not the case. If we just bring the Edim in at night, after this took place during the day, then you have a problem. Because then the Edim are signing to something that happened during the day, but they were not there or they were not available at that time, and the delay had nothing to do with the Inyan. The delay was because the Edim weren't there yet, or they didn't show up, or they didn't sign it yet. In that case, it would not be permitted. The question of whether this statement here of Rabbi Elazar applies to both Gittin and regular contracts, or only to regular contracts and not to Gittin, is subject to a Machloket Rishonim. Over here, Tosfot and Rashi clearly believe that it applies to Gittin, like regular Ashtarot, and that this halacha is said broadly. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who believe that this is only said with regards to other contracts, not with regards to either because of Maisa Beitin. It's something that needs to be publicized. Over here, we have the publicity during the day. And so, in essence, it was effective during the day because the whole purpose of signing the document is to create publicity. And that already happened during the daytime. Or, it's as Rashi says, the kinyan already took place. The formal kinyan's done. So here, this is just a documentation of what already happened. In the cases of marriage, the kinyan is through the actual chuppah, not through the signing of the document of the ketubah. And so because of that, it really was effective during the day, and you're just signing to something that already happened. You're really signing up what's called a shtar raya, a document of evidence, rather than a document of kinyan. So those are the two reasons that are brought over here. Tosafot over here discusses an interesting cultural issue. It's something that we discussed in the past in the Masechet Ketubot, that in their day, it was very popular to get married on Erev Shabbat, right before Shabbat. The main reason being that they were impoverished, and it was extremely difficult for them to bring together the means to pay for a big meal for Shabbat, as well as for a wedding. So what they used to do was combine the two of them. They'd have the wedding just before Shabbat, and then the Sudah for the wedding would be the Friday night meal of Shabbat, and therefore they would be able to save on the expenditures. So Tosafot here says, well, that presents a problem. It says, Yesh mekomot shnogim lichtov ha'ktubah be'erev Shabbat, as should be done. People write the Ketubah on Erev Shabbat because of the fact that the marriage is taking place on Erev Shabbat. Udochotma b'motzei Shabbat. But then they only sign it on Motzei Shabbat because the wedding's taking place right before Shabbat. So they write the Ketubah, but they don't have time to sign it. They sign it on Motzei Shabbat. Ve'ein achon lasot keim. He says that it doesn't make sense. Mishom tosefet. The Dilma leit leikalo. Because of the tosefet Ketubah that is not always clear and only comes out from the signatures of those the people sign on the ketubah, does it become public? How much is involved in this ketubah? The core ketubah, we know how much it is. And then when she gets married, that's a tznai beit din. And if she got married, it's clear to everybody that that's going to be an encumbrance of the woman on the estate of the husband. But the tosefet that was added in, that's not clear to everybody. And that's information that needs to become widely known in order to protect creditors and buyers after that point in time. On the other hand, when there was a kinyan before Shabbat, the woman took the ketubah and there was a kinyan before Shabbat, then everything was finalized before Shabbat. Then the edim that are signed here are just signing on a shtar raya, but already there's going to be a call because she got the ketubah and she has the information in hand. Her relatives, whoever it is, will see the tosefet and everybody will know what the tosefet is. Tosfot here talks about this practical problem surrounding their practice to get married very late on Friday afternoons, and what you do about the ketubah in that case. And in their day, the ketubah and the money surrounding the ketubah and the negotiations surrounding the ketubah were essential. You can go to Yerushalayim, and in the old Yishuv Museum, you can see the fact that all the negotiations and all that surrounded weddings was all about what each party was going to bring to the wedding. And they used to have a big gathering of all the relatives, and it was a very public issue as to how much each party was giving in. And that's what Tosfot says here, that once the ketubah is given to the woman, then it's going to be obvious what the tosefet the husband gave, and then it'll become publicly or widely known. But if there's no kinyan, she doesn't have the ketubah, and they don't sign till Motzei Shabbat, the tosefet will not become widely known till later. And therefore, there is an issue in terms of publicity, and you should therefore not sign it based on the Friday date, but rather on the Motzei Shabbat date. Okay, Rabbi Shimon Machshir. Amarova, my Talmud, Rabbi Shimon. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon's position? Now, we know that Rabbi Shimon does not disagree fundamentally that you don't need to date the get. Rabbi Shimon believes that you do need to date the get, but why doesn't he worry about this issue of separation of time, which is that you date the get at one point, and then the signing or the giving of the debt happens at a different time? How come he doesn't worry about that? So we know that he doesn't worry about Shema Yechapeh, because he obviously disagrees with the Chachamim. But he does agree that we need the date in there for Peirot. So if he's worried about Peirot, then why doesn't he worry about the fact that the date of the Ketivah is different than the date of the giving of the get? Kasavar, Gevin Shinatan Einav de Gorsha, Shuvein lo Peirot. So again, information that the Gemara assumed we had before from yesterday's daf, but that Rabbi Shimon Shita is premised on the fact that as soon as the husband decides to divorce her, he loses his right to the Peirot. Amrei Reish Lakish. Lo hichshir Rabbi Shimon ela alter. Rabbi Shimon only allows you to do this if it is proximate in time. But if there's a huge interval of time, he would not allow it. I mean, in the Mishnah, the case is where the get was written during the day, and then it was given that night. So the times are proximate. In that case, he says it's fine. But if there's going to be an elapsement of time where the get is written today and dated today, and then it's going to be given 10 days later, then Rabbi Shimon would say there's a problem of having the get predated. Chashinan, the chashash, or the problem that I have is Shema Pies. There's a possibility that maybe he came to a reconciliation with his wife in the interim, and so because of that, we worry about the fact that this get is no longer valid. Rashi says over here, Shema Pies, et ishto betokach ubaaleh v'avi get yashan. Rashi says that not only did he appease her, but they got back together, they had intercourse, and now this makes this into a get yashan. Tosfot here in the Rabbeinu Tam says that he thinks that's incorrect, and he brings proof to the fact that the word pies, it does not associate it with bi'ah. The pies does not have a correlation necessarily with bi'ah of the husband and wife, as well as the fact that get yashan itself is, as we mentioned before, it's not clear that it is pasul b'di'avad. It is pasul d'chatchila to use it, but b'di'avad, maybe it does work. And therefore, based on that, he thinks that that's not the proper explanation. But when we're done, the Shema pies da'acha, what's all the matter? Shema pies ubitel. V'amar get shenatati batel hu. Our fear is that if he reconciled with his wife, that he was mevatel the get. Mari hocha, k'shamar lehem lachto mikan v'ad asara yamim. Ol the altar. V'lehem cholu chatmo ad asara yamim. It's when he tells the Edim, you can sign from now till 10 days from now, but he doesn't tell him to sign right away. U'bishat ha-chatima lo yabal sham. And when they're going to sign the get, the husband's not there. And our fear is here, the husband changed his mind, and in changing his mind, he also retracted their agency. And if that's the case, then they can't sign on it, and they can't give it to his wife. But if after 10 days he shows up and says, sign it, it's kasher. Because afilu bitel get kodem hakaimelan k'rav Nachman de chozer megareish bo. As long as the husband is still here, according to Tosafot, telling us that he wants the get to be given, then we would give the get because we don't have to worry about it. We're not choshesh for get yashan like Rashi. What we are choshesh for is the fact that the husband may have changed his mind in that interim period. If he has the edim signed right away, even though the get doesn't end up in the wife's hands for a period of time, we don't worry about it because the edim signed. That means that he intends to give the get, and the get's ready to go, and we assume that's what he wants. The question becomes, when he gives the get to them, it says sign it whenever you want, or, you know, anytime in the next 10 days. If they come to sign it later, they have to suspect that maybe the Baal changed his mind in the interim, and they shouldn't be signing this get, and that's why we don't allow such an elapsement of time or duration of time. And Tosfot says over here, the difference between the case where you sign later versus signing now is, the reason we're choshesh over here is because it wasn't signed yet. Versus the cases that we've seen along till now, where the husband signs the get, has the get and sends it from Medinat Hayam. Well, when he sends it from Medinat Hayam, what about all that elapsed time there? Why don't we worry that there was pius, that the husband was mevatel the agency? Yeah. So Tosafot says it's a big difference. Once the get is signed, We know that the husband basically closed the door and he's sending the get, and that's what he intends to do. And in addition to that, since the get wasn't signed, when there's reconciliation, there's not a lot of hullabaloo about that. If the get was already signed, that makes it a public issue that they're getting divorced. If there's a reconciliation, that will also be public because their reconciliation will be a reversal of what happened in the get. But in a case where the get's not signed, first of all, it's not widely known, and therefore if they reconcile, it won't also be widely known. And number two is, when it's not signed, we have this possibility that the husband might change his mind. As opposed to when it's signed, that is a given deal. That says, when the normal ones, the get is signed, then people don't renege or retract the get. And if they do, everybody knows about it because it's really a public issue. Whereas the Tosfot read over here says the problem of pius is similar to what we mentioned earlier in the daf, that for Rabbi Shimon, the issue is from the time that he decides to divorce her. But the fact that he has an elapsement of time and we're worried about pius shows you that there wasn't a loss of entitlement to the payroll during that period of time. As the read says, Perish Shemi Fayesima Veinu Tzilagarsha Vlohivsi Perot De Matai Amrina Mishachinatanainav the Garsha Ainlo Perot. When do we say that when he wants to divorce her, he no longer is entitled to Perot? That's Bishaino Mitcharet Bigamaru Migaresh. That's when he is certain he's not going to regret divorcing her, and he intends to divorce her. At that point, he loses Perot. Aval Im Mitcharet. He changes his mind, or during that period of time, he's having sfeikot as to whether he wants to go through with this. In that case, if he's still with sfeikot, or he's still trying to decide if he wants to divorce her, then technically he does not lose the peirot until he makes that final decision in giving the get, he loses the peirot. And in that case, even Rabbi Shimon would agree that he doesn't lose the payroll from Shat Ktiva, but rather from Shat Netina. And that's what we're worried about here, this issue of the right of the Baal to the payroll, or on the other side, the right of the woman to take the payroll back, because in this case, it is not determined by Shat Ktiva, but rather Shat Netina, because he was not certain about the divorce. As we discussed earlier in today's daf, that when there's uncertainty surrounding the divorce, then you can't say that he concluded he's going to divorce her, because it wasn't a conclusion. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, afilu mikan vada sara yamim. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees and says that Rabbi Shimon's opinion applies even if there's an elapsement of 10 days in the interim. Rabbi Shimon still says you can sign it even though there's a differential between the dating of the shtar and the signing of the shtar. Because if there was reconciliation, it is a widely known item. Rashi over here gives an interesting explanation of Kali Itlu. Generally, Kali Itlu means that it's a public issue or something that is very well known. Over here, Rashi does not describe it that way. It says the Kali Itlu is not because their appeasement or their reconciliation is public, but rather their discord was public. And that's what Rashi says. Shashchenim vashchenot shomim tagaru ktatash ben ish liishto. That the neighbors hear about the quarreling between the husband and wife. Once they come to peace or come to terms with each other, everybody knows about it. Not because they know about the appeasement, the reconciliation, but because they no longer hear the fighting that is going on. Remember, in their day, they lived in very close quarters, and everything you said or anything that you did was known by all your neighbors. So here, if they were in quarrels or they're having difficulty in their marriage, everybody around them knows that. Once that is quieted, then everybody also knows about it. Not because they know that they had a reconciliation, but they know that they're not fighting anymore. And so therefore Rashi says, Kala Ito, which is the absence of the fighting, is makes it that it's Kala Ito. Not that there's actively publicity about the reconciliation. Where others, like the Balei HaTosafot, talk about Kala Itle as being more of a active sort of appeasement or reconciliation, has publicity in and of itself, rather than publicity from the fact of the absence of the quarreling between them. Okay, Itmar, Amar le'asara, kitvu get le'ishti. Says to 10 people, write a get to my wife. Why does he need 10 people to do this? It's obviously you don't need 10 people to write the get. So one person is going to write the get on behalf of the 10 people. So then what is the role of the 10 people over here? In terms of a get, you only need 2 edim on the get. So then there are an excess of 8 people here. What is our view of those 8 people? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shnai Mishum Edim. When he says this, they meant 2 of them should be Edim. Kulam Mishum Tnai. And the remainder are what we call conditional. As a condition to the divorce, he wants these other 8 people to be involved in the process. Not in any official standing in terms of the get, but in a more general sense. The idea here that he wants to make it a public issue, he wants to make it an embarrassment to his wife, whatever the reasons are, he wants these other 8 people involved in the process, but not necessarily as edim. Reish Lakish amar kulam mishum edim. Reish Lakish says, when he says kulam, he means all of them. All of them have to sign. And that means that he makes a stipulation that this get will only be a get if these 10 people sign on the get. He wants every one of them signed on as an aide because he wants to embarrass her in front of all these people. Hey, Chidami, what is the case here? Ilei medula amar lehu kulchem. If he didn't express it as all of you, ba'atznan amar le'asara kitvu get li'ishti, echad kutev u'shnayim chotmim. Says the 10 people, go write my wife a get. One writes, 2 sign, and there's no issue because he's just talking to a group of individuals that just make sure you take care of this. Ela damar lehu kulchem. So then if he says kuchem, my benayu. If he already says kuchem, all of you, then it means all of you. And according to Rabbi Yochanan, all of them have to sign. And according to Reish Lakish, all of them have to sign. Why does it matter that the additional 8, whether they're considered to be edim, quote unquote, or whether they're considered to be a tnai, condition in the get? Either way, they need to sign in order for the get to go effective. Ike benayu, techatum beitrei minayu biyome, vinach mikan vadasara yamim. The difference between them will be in a case where the original 2 edim sign on the day that the get is written, and the remaining 8 sign over the next couple of days. Madamar mishum tnai. The one who says it's because of a condition, kasher. I mean, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the edim, qua edim, signed it on the day that it was written. So as far as that is concerned, we're done. The other 8 people just need to sign it, but not as edim. That means they're not subject to the limitation of signing on the same day that as the get is written. They can sign any time over the next period of time. Umandamar mishum edim pasul. The one who says that they're actually edim, that every one of them is deemed to be an aid, they are all subject to the same rules of edim, which means they must sign on the day that the get was written. Otherwise, it's not going to be a good get. If they somehow tarry or they sign at a different time, if they're deemed to be an aid, then it's a pasul get because you're not allowed to sign it, not at the time that it's dated within the get. If this was then within the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, then it's interesting because then the Gemara is following the position of Reish Lakish, that the demand that they deem sign it on the day that it's written and not Mikan Vadasara Yamim. On the other hand, if this is according to the Rabbonon, then we know that you have to sign on the exact day that the date is in there. And therefore, the question is in within the sheet of the Rabbonon, what are the status of these other 8 individuals? Inami. Another nafkamina between them is, Gon shenimsa echad mehem karov pasul. If we find one of the edim to be either a relative or pasul edut. The mandamar mishum tnai kasher. According to one who says that it's just a condition in the get that the other 8 sign on there, they're not functioning as edim, then the first 2 edim who signed it made the get effective or proper. I mean, it's not mizuyach mitocho, it's not a problematic get. The other 8 that signed there are simply fulfilling the tnai that he wants these 10 people signed there. But if that's the case, if one of those is a relative, then we don't worry about it. Laban damar mishum edim pasul. One who says that they're all edim, then they become a single unit of edim, a kat edim. Yeah. And we know that if you have a single unit of edim, and if there are 100 of them, if there's a relative amongst them, he's pusel all the edim because they are considered to be a unit with a karov in there, and it doesn't work. So do over here. If there's a karov amongst those 10, and they're all functioning as edim, he's pusel everyone as an aid in this case. Now, the Gemara says, Ichatum betchila karov pasul. What happens? Obviously, the question here is according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that the other 8 are al tnai. What happens if one of the first 2 signatories are a karov pasul? So Rabbi Yochanan says, you have 10 here. 2 out of the 10 are edim. The other 8 are al tnai. So now they come to sign. The first 2 signed, you would assume, are the edim, and the other 8 become the tnai. So in this case, what happened is that the karover pasul signed first. So they're clearly not an aid because they can't function as an aid. What does that mean? Does that mean now the document is pasul because they as psulim signed on the get, and they are effectively edim because they're the first two to sign, and therefore it's pasul? Or do we say that it's obvious that the karova pasul are not the edim to the get because he knew when he told all to them to sign them that the karova pasul could not be an aid on the get? So he never intended for them to be edim on the get. He simply intended for that to be a tnai. And even when they signed first, it's just al tnai. It's not because of edut. Over here, we're following the gears of Rashi that says, ichotim bitchila, that they were the first ones signed on the get. There is another gears amongst the Mishunim that the question here was not about that they were signed first, but rather, lichatchila. Can they be lichatchila k'sherim? Because b'diavad, everybody agrees that if the karov pasul were signed first, that this is a good get. The only question is, lechatchila, is it kasher? And that's the way that the other Rishonim read the question of the sugya over here. So amrila kasher, v'amrila pasul. So we have two deyot. One says it's kasher, one says it's pasul, and now it's going to explain what we just said. Amrila kasher, the one who says it's kasher, t'nayhu. It was a condition. Amrila pasul. So even the one who says it's pasul agrees fundamentally that the get should be kasher over here. The problem is that we're going to get mixed up with other shtarot. And other shtarot, if this was the situation and the karov or pasul signed first, then we would have a problem. And the truth is, it's not just other shtarot, but even in a case of a get itself, where he doesn't say kulchem, and then the karov or pasul would sign first, you'd also get confused there. The only reason here that the karov or pasul is okay to sign first is because of the fact that he said kuchem, and that they are really a tnai, they're a condition in the get, not in real aid. But when someone looks at it and says that a karov or a pasul was signed on it, they're going to think that's fine in normal shtarot. They're not going to know to differentiate in that case between it being kuchem versus being a regular get. And because of that, they're going to come to the wrong conclusion that a karov or pasul is allowed to sign on a get. Rashi, the Girsato, says that the problem here is that we're going to get mixed up with other shtarot, and having a karov or pasul as the first edim sign on here is going to be a problem in other shtarot as well as in other gitin. On the other hand, Tosafot spends time showing that that's not necessarily the case. We find by other shtarot that a karov or pasul that signed first is not an issue. And so what Tosafot in the end differentiates between gitin and shtarot says is that when it comes to gitin, that the first edim that sign are considered to be the real edim. Whereas by other shtarot, it is the last edim that are signed on it that are considered to be the edim. The reason then for that is something that we saw earlier, which is that by a get, we only allow the signing of a get when all the edim are present there together. And therefore, mistama, whoever signed first, were the real edim because everybody was there and they put the first edim to sign first. Then by shtarot, where you don't have to sign in the presence of the other parties, then we just assume that they sign based on their availability. And therefore, it's only the last two become the edim because the determination of who signed first has nothing to do with whether they were the edim or not the edim, but rather it has to do with the ability to get them there and get them to sign it. And therefore, the completion of the document is done by the last two edim, and they become the real edim on the shtar. And therefore, it actually turned out that the din by a get and a shtar are just the opposite. By the get, if the first two signatories are karov pasul, there'll be more reason to be posel it. And if we find them in the middle at the end, then we wouldn't be posel the get in that case. On the other hand, by shtarot, it'll be just the opposite. If we find them in the beginning, we'll assume that they are not problematic because they gave them to sign at the beginning because they're very kavod. But they're not the real edim. But when you find them in the middle or at the end, then there's more suspicion that they were used as real edim. And we would have to worry about the fact that a karov pasul now signed on this document. According to the Rif's Girsa before, that the question here is about by Gitin, whether a karov pasul would be kosher lechatchila, the reason to differentiate by a get versus other documents is one of two reasons. Either because by a get, edim misire karte, therefore the signing of the edim is really not essential to the get, and that's why we're makel over here, that if there was a karov pasul, we would think maybe there's more reason to say that it is mutar or the chatkila kasher over here. As well as the fact that by gitin, normally someone only has two edim sign. And when you have a large number of edim sign, it's clear that the other edim there are for a tanai. And then you'll know that when the karov and pasul are there, they were all the tanai. Whereas on other documents, the need for all the signatures is not always about a tanai. It might have to do with the nature of the transaction, the parties involved, and therefore there might be a demand that all 10 people sign, even though you only need 2 edim to make the contract effective. This individual told 10 people to write a get for his wife. 2 of them signed on that day. And the remainder signed over the next 10 days. After the commander of Yishu ben Levi. So they came before Rabbi Shimon Levi and they wanted to know the Pesach Halacha. Is this a kosher get? You can rely on Rabbi Shimon b'shat ha'dechak, who says, Nechta b'yom v'nechtam b'layla is kosher. Where it says, Rama Reish Lakish, lo hichshir Rabbi Shimon ela altar. That Rabbi Shimon, if you're going to rely on Rabbi Shimon here, we only relied on Rabbi Shimon when it happened immediately, according to Reish Lakish. Not when you had a delay or an elapsement of time of 10 days. So he says, Vayi Rabbi Yochanan Svirle. He holds like Rabbi Yochanan that Rabbi Shimon Shita is even when you have an elapsement of time, you can still sign it and it's not a problem in the get. He goes, wait, if you're holding like Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan also has another din. Rabbi Yochanan's din about the fact that Rabbi Shimon applies even if you have a delay between the writing the get and the signing the get, even though it's more than just from day to night time, but over a larger period of time. But he also says, when you have 10 people, 2 of them are Edim, the rest are tonight. So why do you need Rabbi Shimon at all? According to Rabbi Yochanan, fundamentally, this get was signed on time. 2 Edim signed on the day that the date was in there, the get was a good get. The other 8 that are signing are all tonight. So if you hold up Rabbi Yochanan, why don't you say over here that it's a kosher get? Because it's a kosher get. Even according to the Chachamim, it would be a kosher get. Rabbi Yochanan, Shnai Mishum Edim, Kula Mishum tonight. Over there he holds like Reish Lakish. So he paskins like Rabbi Yochanan that in the explanation of Rabbi Shimon, that Rabbi Shimon allows you to sign even after a lapsement of time and it's still kasher. But he doesn't hold like Rabbi Yochanan with regards to the fact that when you say to 10 people, kitvu to get the ishti, that means 2 of them are edim and the others are a condition to the get, but rather like Reish Lakish, that all of them are edim. And the fact that he needs Rabbi Shimon shows you that. Because if he held like Rabbi Yochanan in the case of the 10 people, then he wouldn't have to invoke Rabbi Shimon as the kula that he's using over here. Because even the Chachamim would agree. The fact that he says it's Rabbi Shimon shows you that he does not hold like Rabbi Yochanan, but rather like Reish Lakish. And all 10 of them are Edim. Since all 10 of them are Edim, they all needed to sign on the date at that time. And according to the Chachamim, that didn't happen, so it's a get pasul. Only Rabbi Shimon, who says that you don't need the signatures to be aligned with the date on the get, will allow you this kula. And again, it's only within the position of Rabbi Yochanan explaining Rabbi Shimon. And that's what the Gemara's conclusion is over here, that Rabbi Shimon Levi passed him like Rabbi Yochanan with regards to his explanation of Rabbi Shimon, but not with regards to his explanation of the Chachamim's position with regards to Asara. When you talk about 10, whether they're considered all to be Edim, like Reish Lakish, or Rabbi Yochanan says 2 Edim and the rest are tonight, there, Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi held like Reish Lakish that they're all considered to be Edim, and that's why they should have all signed on the first day, and we need Rabbi Shimon to bring us the Kula. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Yutet Amud Aleph.